This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Yes, in the studio today, as usual, we have George. How are you doing, George?
Hey, how's it, Tom?
Yeah, very good. And you, thank you.
Good.
We had Chad in studio as well. How are you, Chad?
I'm back.
You back. Are you on there?
No, I'm not.
There we go. Now you're on. Okay.
I'm back.
You're back. Yeah, exactly. Like a crazy stalker. Anyway.
Well, actually live and in person, not just with a pre-recording
exactly.
This time around. So.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So listen, follow us, hashtag AutoCentral at AutoTraderSA on Facebook and Twitter. We've got Fazan in studio as well, who's doing what she does best, taking pictures and
typing away furiously,
keeping everybody up to speed with what's happening from the studio here today. Right, let's get things kicked off here. Quite a bit to get through today. We've got a F1 update coming up just now. We're going to chat some news, and then obviously, as usual, we're going to be talking Coty finalists 2018. And Chad's obviously in studio to unpack that for us. And then the usual tech segment. So let's get things kicked off. I see the Gauteng provincial government on Thursday said it would soon carry out an outreach program for meter taxis to help owners comply with the necessary license requirements. We all know that the meter taxi operators and e-hailing services, mainly Uber, have been at loggerheads over the market share and claims of illegitimacy. There have been several incidences. We know this. We've unpacked all these incidences. And it looks like... Ismail Vardy, have they put this outreach program, which will be conducted at various licensing offices, starting in Tshwane on the 12th and 13th of October, and then in Sedibeng on the 17th, and then in Kirilleni on the 19th, and Joburg on the 24th and 25th of October. Obviously, people who have applied for licenses that haven't been approved, they want to obviously fast-track these and make sure that everybody's kind of playing fair.
At least somebody's doing something.
Well, exactly. That was.
Is it what's needing to be done, though?
I think it is.
Well, maybe a step in the right direction, but it's definitely not the solution to all the problems that have been
having. No, look, I don't think they're going to sort that out.
Taxis and the likes. No,
yeah, I mean, look, the guys are obviously, it's turf wars and they're fighting over routes and stuff like that. And I think with the e-hailing service like Uber, it's very much consumer-driven where, you know, the consumer tells the taxi where to go, whereas, you know, meter taxis as well, but the guys can only drive on certain routes and in certain regions.
It's still based on a telephonic call to order the taxi or call the taxi, unless you're at the airport, in which case they're hovering around there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're getting all uppity because, yes, business is being stolen. Business is being stolen because, well, you haven't been reinventing yourself and offering a decent service. You've just been resting on your laurels.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got uppity about it and now it's needing third-party intervention.
Well, look, I mean, the thing is that things are happening, which is really nice, and it's out in the open, and things are being addressed. Exactly.
Yes.
But while just talking about that, I see Uber CEO will travel to London to discuss a ban. So the... what does it say? The City Transport Agency, Transport for London, said last week it would not renew Uber's license when it expires on the 30th of September, citing a lack of corporate responsibility. So this is Uber in London. I mean, that's pretty hectic, isn't it?
Yeah, no. I think we haven't seen the end of this yet, this London story. And it'll probably become the benchmark for how Uber operates around the rest of the world.
Well, so they'll obviously use this as a point in case.
Yeah.
I don't know too much about why, but among the factors considered by the regulator was Uber's approach to reporting serious criminal offences and its use of software designed to evade the authorities. So I don't know how... I mean, if you're in a, I suppose when you're on your app, you can, I mean, I know ways you can flag speeding traps and if there's cops ahead, that all gets picked up. Is that a real concern though? I mean, I don't know.
It's probably a red herring. I mean, I think there's bigger problems there.
Yeah.
You know, than just evading the authorities. You know, it's probably more a case of reporting crime.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem rather than the evasion.
I just couldn't imagine a world-class city like London not having a meter a service on offer like this, like an Uber. I mean, Uber's pretty much revolutionized the taxi industry, hasn't it?
It has, but you got to remember that in London, they've got a very well-established, yeah, well-run pub. Well, I say well-run,
yes, yeah, yeah,
pretty loosely, actually. It has its issues. But public transport service that has been running for ages.
Yes.
You know, so they've been through all the trials, tribulations, and the likes. And this is all where, dare we say, taxpayer money is going towards. Mm. You know, this is getting the government backing.
Yeah.
And here you get this third party coming in and just really
taking business away from infrastructure, well, businesses that have been set
adding a little
by,
too much salt
the
to the stew.
Yeah, sure. But so anyway, I mean, that's quite an interesting story. So we'll keep a close eye on that. Then out of Berlin in Germany, I thought this was actually quite funny. So this guy owns a McLaren, right? It's a big orange McLaren, and he parks it just outside the stable doors of a donkey's enclosure. And this donkey had a look at this McLaren and thought, well, there's something nice to chew on. So had a full go at this car. And the owner of the vehicle is now trying to get this donkey's owner into court to sue him for, what, 5,000 euros, so 80,000 rand in damage on the McLaren. And this ex student, well, you shouldn't have parked your car there. I mean, you know, what do you do?
Donkey's territory.
Is that an act of God?
I don't think it's an act of God, but it's definitely funny.
No, but it's an unplanned, it's accidental, it's, you know, it's not due to, well, and that's actually, could they put it down to negligence?
On whose part?
On the owner, the driver's part.
There's another angle on it. If it is negligence, on whose part? Owner, driver?
Well, I don't think you can blame the owner of the donkey. If the donkey was in its stable and you've parked your car right there.
Well, yeah.
You know.
But it's a donkey. It's not supposed to be chewing stuff. But I love the line in this in this report, because it made me sit there and say, is this what passes as news these days?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the owner of the pricey McLaren sports car is in court to try and get a donkey owner to pony up for an alleged 80,000 rand in damage caused by the animal chomping the backside of the vehicle.
I can understand, you know, light-hearted, you know, news, and you know, it doesn't always have to be doom and gloom. The police said that the donkey may have mistaken the orange McLaren that was parked up against his enclosure as a giant carrot. I'm like, wow, thank you.
No, I mean, that's like trying to sue Sandparks for a lion attacking your car.
Exactly,
when you're in
or an elephant, you know, ramming into the side of you.
You know,
I mean,
you're coming into that animal's territory.
Exactly.
But then you start talking about public liability, full disclosure, indemnities on properties, that type of thing.
It's getting too crazy.
Yeah, that's too deep. But anyway, well done on that donkey, sure. But I mean, that must be, what happened to your car? No, donkey. That really is funny. Anyway, I'll see, Chad, and you'll probably know a little bit more about this, but Nissan have unleashed the updated 370Z in South Africa.
Yes. Well, for 2018, we got a refreshed, facelifted vehicle. Wasn't at the launch myself. A lot of the colleagues were on it. And still the same, running the same naturally aspirated, high-revving 3.7-litre V6 engine. They've just changed a bit of the bumper detailing, door handle detailing, a couple of changes to the interior, which is probably the one area where the 370 was really starting to show its age.
Okay.
This car needs a proper overhaul in terms of its design.
Have you ever driven?
It's been on the road for long.
Have you driven one?
Yeah.
Have you?
And well, not the 370. I drove the 350Z.
Yeah.
But just the styling of this car. It's a beautiful car.
Yeah.
But I think it needs a bit of an upgrade.
I largely feel that it wasn't enough of a departure from the 350
for
it to run as long as what it has.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like one in the same. It's still carrying the same silhouette. It's still got very much the same layout, drivetrain, and the likes, you know, just slightly upgraded.
Yeah.
And yes, it's time for a proper revisit. And with the way that current styling trends have gone in terms of, if I can use a term, like retrofying their designs,
yeah,
you think of the current Mustang and the way that it's really trying to pull a lot of the key features from the early 60s Mustang that was so iconic.
Yes.
This one tried to do it, but this is a design that's been around for over 10 years now. You know, the general silhouette.
Yeah.
And while it's trying to hark back to the 240s and the 260Zs of the late 70s and 80s, that it does need a refresh. And I think we could go back and do the 60-70s design even better than what they've done it here with the 350-370 silhouette.
Mm. Like they've done with the Mustang.
Like they've done with the Mustang and so many others.
I mean, that Mustang is a nice car. I'd still prefer to drive the older version. I think the classic look, you know, I mean, that's a classic sports car.
Yeah, for many
car,
people, but there's still no denying the amount of head-turn factor that exists in the current Mustang. There's nothing else on the road that looks like it, and it still looks like it is that, you know, classic vehicle.
Yeah. I think most cars are going towards the Tesla shape.
Yeah.
You know, minimal drag coefficient. You know, a couple of styling changes, but if you look at most cars, the Ford Focus looks like a Tesla. Well, Tesla probably looks like the Ford Focus. And I think a lot of cars are going to that shape, that sort of big mouth grill shape.
Now, I don't think that necessarily the 350 is a particularly un-aerodynamic design. Mm. That was based, a lot of the architecture and the design of that was based on, like I say, the 240-260Z, which itself was a bit of a Japanese copy of the Jaguar E-Type, which at the time was unseen and known to be quite slippery with a very low drag coefficient.
Yeah.
So I don't think I think there's a place for vehicles that look like this. Definitely is.
Yeah.
And especially when you're running a front engine, rear wheel drive sort of layout. But
I mean, you see them on the road. Are they pretty popular? I mean, you know, between like when you guys, I mean, you as motoring journalists,
it's not as popular as it should be. Let's put it that way.
I mean, the reason I say that is I think the future of cars is these manufacturers are going to share a lot of resource.
Yes.
And that sharing of platforms, that sharing of chassis, chassis design. I mean, because I don't think the future of cars is going to be around its different chassis or different styling or different design. It's going to be around the different interior.
Yeah,
and it's going to be around the different software,
okay.
because it's just bloody expensive to produce a car that is different from everyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
So the sharing of resources, I think, in the future is going to bring the cost of the entire industry down. And when that brings the cost of the industry down, the real differences in the car is going to be the place that you sit, the inside. Yeah, and
so it's all just going to be a variation on a theme.
Yes,
in essence.
Yes, yes. You're going to get a couple of different, you know, designs in the world, and people are going to just draw on that.
Well, I mean, we saw some of those electric vehicles coming out of the Frankfurt Motor Show. I mean, those look completely different, where you can actually, your car becomes an extension of your lounge. I mean,
I think it's a bit of a pipe dream.
No, yeah. I agree. I mean, but you know, I'm not going to have coffee in my
car.
Know, yeah,
but you do.
Yeah, you do. Not when you're sitting at home.
No.
Like, where do you guys want to spend the afternoon? No, let's go to your.
Let's just go and sit in your car. Yeah. What are we? 16 again?
Yeah.
No. But take a look at what we got in the likes of Infiniti.
Yes.
And I think it was Pebble Beach that they unleashed it or unveiled it, not unleashed it. But it was very much a concept, but it was based on such a classic pre-war era racer.
Mm.
And to see that sort of design and thought process coming to life, the fact that it still remains and that they can still turn it into something beautiful and something still functional, I think is wonderful, because I think we're going to start seeing a lot of the older designs, whether it's older Talbots or Packards and the likes, those sort of designs being sort of reinvented. Can't wait to see what they come up with in a nice, svelte, modern take.
But I think I agree with George. Like those, I mean, Tesla are really their cars just look good.
They're not overcomplicated. They're just really simple. But I think it's more of the sharing of resources. These car manufacturers are going to share resources.
Well, I mean, you'll see later on.
We've got
when
a
get
story
into the
in the tech side that's right on that. Very surprising, in fact.
Well, I mean, you know, that's like two rivals, you know, deciding that at the end of the day, it's probably better off
to shake hands.
Exactly, 100%. Yeah. Anyway, I see unpaid traffic fines. So RTIA, Rita, apologizes for SMS communication error. So a lot of Gauteng motorists, and I don't know if you guys have got, I don't get fines, have received notification about unpaid traffic fines by the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, which is all fair and well. However, there is an issue that some of these notifications are for fines that were received over 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I mean, what do you do if you get an SMS that's saying, hey, listen, here's a fine from 2012?
Or warrant pending, warrant out for X, Y, and Z ID number. No, come on, man.
But apparently they can't. They're not allowed to. So they're using this, obviously, to notify the public. They're falling out of what the law says in terms of how long you're allowed to let a fine kind of...
Lapse,
yeah. Mm. So, I don't know. Have you received... Fazana?
I haven't received any.
No.
Nothing?
No.
No.
Because I've seen you drive.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, I do have a lot, but I haven't received any.
No notifications via SMS or email. No. And apparently as well, they're putting everything into that notification, like your cell phone number, your ID, they've got...
Well, as long as they're speaking to you personally, then I suppose it's okay to put the information in. Yeah, as long as they're not banging out to anybody else.
But if they've got a system that is that inept in terms of not being able to
identify.
Piece together dates and identify a date. What's their guarantee, or what guarantee is there that they're sending it to the right address?
So Retail put out there that they're on record that these notifications are meant to keep motorists informed of their traffic fine status and therefore their rights and responsibilities on the roads. Should the alleged infringer feel the need to challenge or dispute this traffic fine, it can obviously be done. So anyway,
here's a government tender sold to the lowest bidder.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
No. I don't know.
We see it too much, sadly.
Look, I think we need a proper... I mean, it makes sense that we've got a proper system like that. I'd rather get an SMS notification than a letter in the post.
No. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Yes. But need a competent company and a competent institution that can do this.
Yeah, just infrastructure that works around
infrastructure that works. When it comes to information like this, dealing with people's money, the fear that you're trying to elicit with... Not trying to elicit, but the fear that you end up inadvertently eliciting with this.
Yeah.
No. You need to be competent when you do it. There isn't room for this type of error. There needs to be fail safes. There needs to be test systems and the likes.
Yeah.
Sadly, it's just very disappointing.
Anyway, we'll see what happens with that. 7,000 kilometers in 7 days. Team 77 drives for children fighting cancer. And I love these kind of stories because it really, really is nice.
Really feel good stuff, eh?
Yeah, on Friday the 22nd of September, Team 77 drive made a late afternoon stop in Kharankua at a hospital there, the George Makiri Academic Hospital. And they were delivering gifts, cupcakes, and good cheer to the children in the oncology ward. And it was the end of their 7 day, 7,000 kilometer adventure. This is the third year that this event has run. And these guys are out and about raising funds to support families who, you know, deal with these kind of health issues and children,
mainly
that
children
pay bills
that have
and stuff.
Been
exactly.
Diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah. So,
and I think that is lovely because it's. Cancer's not something that anybody actually asks for.
No, exactly.
You know, if you're leading a particularly hazardous lifestyle in terms of spending too much time out in the sun, you're smoking, drinking, etc., in excess, then yes, you know.
Yeah, that comes with the territory.
Be forewarned that that's a risk of it. But when you're sitting there with a young kid and they're getting diagnosed, and with some of them very aggressive, serious forms of cancers, you know, massive strain on the families. And you're talking about areas that are not as advantaged as some of the higher profile, more prolific areas.
Yeah.
So I think this is a fantastic one. We actually had our very own Anita on, and she was as part of the 77
drive.
Yes. And they went up and down Sarnie Pass, which is quite a grueling 4x4 pass, the Sutu Way.
Yeah.
And they did it in two-wheel drive Kia Souls. Of course, this whole exercise supported by Kia South Africa.
So that's
absolutely
them.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, that's really, really good. So another good story coming out of businesses that are cared and businesses having a purpose and not just about, you know, shifting metal, but actually, you know, giving
back. I see
there's
quite a few organizations taking part. Bridgestone, Tracker, MediaServe, Horizon Global, and 4x4 Megaworld.
Yeah.
They're all involved. All
So hats off to all of those businesses. Well done. Really, really cool.
Always nice to hear that, you know, they're giving that a little bit back and doing something, not for the glory of it, but just, you know, good intention.
I see now also five locally built heroes. So our export vehicle numbers look to be doing all right. And I just thought this was really interesting that the Mercedes C-Class, VW Polo, mainly the, VW Cross?
Polo Cross. Yeah.
The Ford Ranger, the BMW, and a Toyota Hilux. All big export vehicles for South Africa, which
now,
is really great.
Now, in that, they're saying that we had just shy of 30,000 BMW 3 Series units.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been long-standing, the 3 Series. There is actually a transition and a switch. They've stopped producing 3 Series in South Africa, and because most of the world's, or a lot of the world's, let's put it that way, 3 Series were produced in South Africa. Not many people know that.
Like the C-Class.
Yeah, and it's now going over to the X3.
Okay.
And a lot of people had a question marks, and they were saying, well, listen, why are we going from what is the most popular, you know, compact sedan over to a compact SUV that doesn't really sell well locally? And they said, well, listen, it's not for us to say. Why? Yeah. This is Germany that has said it, because X3 sales globally are doing so much better. They're not doing fantastic here yet.
Yeah.
But here's hoping. We've got an X3 launch coming up shortly, brand new X3 that's coming soon.
Okay.
And we'll be talking about that.
But, fantastic.
Quite keen to see how those numbers
change
a little bit when
Well, just hats off to those manufacturers, you know, and hopefully we can continue to, you know, to drive.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good for employment in the country because if we can pump out more X3s than we do BMW 3 Series, it doesn't matter where it goes in the world.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
You know, if we can export it, it's good for our foreign currency reserves. So. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah, very, very good thing. And then I see Paris experiments with a car-free day across the city. I don't know if this would ever work in this country, but they pretty much put a ban on vehicles inside the city. You could ride public transport if you wanted to, and if it was an emergency and you needed to use your car, as long as you know it was legit. You could.
It wasn't an emergency. I was out of coffee.
That's not a real emergency. Yeah, so Sunday
marks for me.
So last Sunday, this is the third time that the city has done this. And just having a look at the photographs, I think, you know, how awesome to see kids and people on bikes and walking and rollerblades. But you can do it in a city like that, I'm sure. I think Joburg, a little bit difficult because of the distances that we have to travel. Mm. But a nice initiative anyway.
Didn't we try something similar in Sandton with the bicycles and that, and it fell flat on its face?
Yeah, it didn't work so well.
It just caused
lots of congestion.
Anyway, so
you've got to have a proper public transport system to do it.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, because you have to be able to provide an alternate means of transport, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what they're doing. They're encouraging people to use the means of transport that already exists there, that are travelling the routes that they would be going, and instead of using their own vehicle with the congestion. Yeah. And sadly, we're just stymied here locally.
Yeah. Anyway, gentlemen, we were chatting outside the studio. Really, really exciting F1 weekend. George, do you want to unpack a little bit for us there, please?
Yeah, no, I was bummed on Saturday when I saw a Vettel kind of engine give up because he had a. They initially thought it was a turbo problem, but it didn't turn out to be a turbo problem, and it was a pipe between the turbo and the engine that was the problem. It was leaking or something. Pardon?
Probably a boost pipe.
Yeah, a boost pipe issue or something. Yeah. Something to do with some connection between the turbo and the engine. So it wasn't the turbo itself.
Yeah.
But they decided to switch out the whole power unit, which meant that Vettel had to start right at the back. I stopped watching the qualifying, which I suppose I shouldn't have done, but it was the second weekend in a row that, potentially he was going to not get any points. And yesterday, by surprise, he absolutely cut through that field and ended up fourth.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he had a
unbelievable
cracking drive.
Cracking drive. But you know what? To be fair, they put a new power unit in, which is a fresh power unit. Now, you must, if you understand how they use these power units, they've got a certain lifespan. And if you push that power unit too hard in the beginning, you cut that lifespan short. So what they try and manage that power unit over, I think it's about six races that they're allowed to use those power units. And and you have to make it last as well as get in the points and get on the podiums. And the way they make those power units last is they turn the power down slightly.
Okay.
So they don't ride it. Drive it at maximum power.
Yeah.
So yesterday's blistering ride by Vettel was, you know, I'd say it was his skill, but it was also they had that power unit turned up because it was brand new. So he was able to do 1.5 seconds a lap faster than anybody else.
And it's a pang. It was also coming down to doing very much the same with the tyres that they were allowed, because there were many of the guys that were going out there setting blistering times, and then all of a sudden towards the end it was just getting chaotic for them because they hadn't rationed their tyres.
Can you explain to me, because I heard, obviously just picking up on the highlights, that Vettel started with new tyres, am I right?
Well, he started off on the softs, the yellow wall tyres, which are slightly harder compound than the super softs.
Okay.
And then changed to the super softs midway through the race. Now, Hamilton started off on the super softs, and super softs have a lot more grip than the soft tyres, and so they had the opposite strategy. But the thing with the Mercedes Benz, they seem to do better on the soft tyres, the yellow wall tyres. And what turned out happening was that the other teams that had started on the super softs, Ferrari had realized that they had done a lot more laps than what they were supposed to on those super softs, which gave Vettel another advantage. So between his skill as a driver, the brand new power unit that they could turn up, and their luck on tyres,
a good strategy.
It was a brilliant, brilliant outcome. I think everything worked together for him. Plus, as he cut through the field, almost all the back markers that he came into contact with pulled off into the pits as he was approaching them. So he got,
didn't hinder him much.
It didn't. No, he got their slipstream, he got the DRS, and then they pulled into the pits, so he got a faster lap. So everything worked in his favour yesterday.
Well, actually, he actually ended up setting new lap record for Sepang yesterday.
Yes, in Malaysia he set the all-time lap record, which will now be, will last forever, it was the last race there.
So that will never, then not going to,
well, I mean, well, I mean, whether it goes back there or not, who knows, but it was the last race there probably for a while.
Yeah.
So no, brilliant race yesterday. And then Hamilton, you know, his engine, he's used all his power units. So he can't turn that power on, that power unit up. So it's going to be a very interesting second half of the year. I don't think it's going to be a slam dunk for Hamilton.
No, so I mean, what you're saying to me now is what he's sitting with at the moment, he has to try and use now for the rest of the season.
Well, not for the rest of the season. They've got a certain number of, I don't know how many races he's done that engine.
Okay.
So as soon as he's done a certain number of races, they can change out components.
Yes.
But at the moment, he's maxed out. So the next couple of races, he can't turn the power unit up.
And then, and obviously changing parts and changing engines and gearboxes and stuff equals minus points, doesn't
exactly.
it?
So it's going to, Chad was saying earlier, it's going to be interesting to see what that post-race incident is going to turn out to, how it's going to turn out to affect Vettel, because if they have to remove the drive shaft, means that gearbox change.
Yeah.
If it's gearbox change, it's a 5-place penalty.
Which will put him down on 29. Because he's 34 points ahead now, Hamilton, huh?
Yeah, I think it's 34
points, 34 ahead, Yeah. Oh, well, that's really, really interesting to see. And you know, we'll obviously keep a close eye on that. I saw another article, like ridiculous in the extreme. If one could fit an exhaust microphone to races, apparently people are, you know, moaning about the fact that the cars aren't as loud as they used to be back in the day. And some people are saying, like, you know, what I mean, is it good or bad for the sport? I mean, I mean, why would you want to put a microphone on a Formula One car's exhaust and blast it across speakers in the stadium? And you still watch Grand Prix now where guys have got headphones on to, you know,
stop the noise.
The thing is, it's actually quite special if you sit there and actually, and especially with the older vehicles, the V10s and the likes, you feel the vehicle coming past. Mm. You're feeling the sound. It's an absolute onslaught on the ears, but you feel the sound. And I think that's part of the experience of being live at the track that people are longing for.
Yeah.
So they're wanting to still feel the sound, but they don't necessarily want to hear the sound per se. You know, if they're sitting there with the cans on and the ear protectors. But it has been labeled as one of the reasons why, you know, they're losing interest in terms of in the stands and general following on TV and viewership, let's put it that way. It's just, it doesn't sound the same. It doesn't have that same sort of sense of occasion, that sense of drama that it used to have, because being very muted because of the turbo motors.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for electric motors, you know that.
Yes.
You know, I can't wait for the world where we can actually hear the birds again.
Yes.
And hear nature again.
Yes.
Because I think we're not hearing those things.
We don't hear
those
because
of all
things.
The noise pollution that exists.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, would you want to go to a nightclub and the music's not loud?
No.
So that's the kind of feeling I think the fans are looking for, is that, you know, you can actually feel the vibration of the cars as they come past.
It's like there's, I don't know if you, I'm going to put something out there. I don't know if you've ever been to, but we were at a place once and like a silent disco, and these guys were all
with headphones. I heard about this. Yes,
and you can
choose,
like, there's three different DJs and you select a color and you just, everyone's like nodding their heads, but you take them off and it's quiet.
It's quiet.
Yeah, I mean, you can obviously hear people walking around, but it's,
maybe that's what they're going to do. Is they're going to, you know, they pump it through electronically, and you can put on a set of headphones. I don't know how.
Maybe that would work.
Everyone's sitting too with official. I'm sorry, George. Now I'm on the flip side to you. Is I'm sitting there and I'm saying, well, electric racing is nice, and yes, it has a place. It can't. You know, yes, we can use it in town. Let's alleviate some of the noise pollution out in the CBDs and that. But when you fire up a nice big hearty V8 motor, I want to know there's a V8 motor.
Yeah.
And
no,
I said
look,
it in one of my reviews when I reviewed the i3, and I said, this is fantastic, because what it's going to do is it's going to make the big V8 and the big petrol motors, it's going to make them more important again. Yeah. It's going to make it special. It's going to be a real occasion. Yeah.
Well, I've said for a while that, you know, you don't... people used to commute on horses.
Yes.
Mm. And it was the thing that you commuted on. Horses haven't gone away. They're now on racetracks.
And they still sound good.
And
they're being looked after better than what they were.
And they actually, they're probably being looked after better than what they were.
For the most part. For the most part, yeah.
So maybe that'll be the thing of the future, is electric cars will be the stuff off racetracks, and V8s and V10s are going to be the things on racetracks.
Yeah.
And I think that's great, because that really draws an additional draw card into coming to see racing. Yes, it may be classed as being archaic and dated, but...
So is horse riding.
That's the thing. We still watch boxing, don't we?
But that's a good sport to watch.
You see, motorsports.
Well, it depends who's fighting. That Conor McGregor fight was terrible. We're not trying to talk about sport.
We're not one of those shows.
We'll have to get onto one of Ben's shows. Yes, all right. So we know that 2018 West Bank SA Car of the Year, we know that the finalists were announced. I think it was last week, Tuesday. Is that right, Chad? No. 2 weeks ago, Tuesday. It was the day after our last show. And that's why we're here today. I want to chat about the 10 finalists and... get everyone's opinion on the vehicles that have been selected. So can I hand over to you, and you can take us through the 10, and let's maybe start at the top with the Alfa Romeo Giulia.
Well, we'll start with that one. And while I haven't had a chance to drive all of our 10 finalists, I believe it is.
Yeah.
We do have 10 this year. Last year, I believe we had 11.
Wasn't it 9? Because somebody else
pulled out. That's right. Sorry, year before that. Yes. So it's always around about 10. So we've actually got a spot on 10 this year. And we do kick things off with the Alfa Romeo Giulia. George, you've driven it as well.
I hope this car wins.
You're sitting there.
Put it out there.
You know what it is? The heart wants the Alfa Romeo Giulia to take it. The head knows that it won't. It's one of those.
Okay.
It's still one of the things that makes the Alfa Romeo Giulia endearing is the fact that it is flawed, and thus it has human-like characteristics and traits. If it was perfect and does everything in an exemplary fashion, then it would come across sterile and just mechanical. But because it has flaws, it has that human trait of being flawed.
I think it's got character.
It's got a lot of character,
but I think they're showcasing the wrong color, and that's going to do it in.
Well, it's not always guaranteed that it's going to be this color. And I don't think the color really comes down to it. There'll be
the
a
Alpha
few
in red. Come on.
Yeah, look, I agree with you there. That's your traditional Alpha color, isn't it? I mean, red. That was it.
Red. But this vehicle in white and in silver works just as well. It's a good looking vehicle. It's a cracking drive. I really did connect with this car brilliantly. I thoroughly enjoyed driving it. My review is actually up and live on our YouTube channel. So if you guys want to see what I thought about it. Yes, I gushed. I'm not going to lie. I gushed. Yeah. It does have a few little shortcomings in that, a very small dealer network, and there's a little bit of stigma around the brand still in terms of reliability, so there's that uncertainty. I'm not going to say that there's a problem with it, but there's a question mark around.
Okay.
Well, we can only go on what we know, and what we know of Alfa Romeo over the last 20 years has not been the most reliable and the most... dependable in that sense.
But now, how long? I mean, this Giulia has been in the market for what, about 3 months?
A year already. I don't know, about a year. Probably close on a year, yes.
And have you heard any stories about...
One or two of the high-performance models, QV model, that has run into a few issues, but...
Could those be driver issues, it's not driving it properly?
You're going to get a dud car everywhere, and we're talking about vehicles that were quite pushed and being put through their paces on a very, very regular basis. Mm. Yes, ideally you wouldn't want a high-performance vehicle to falter like this. You'd want it to be able to go the distance with repeated abuse.
Yeah.
But it happens with any vehicle. It's going to happen with any manufacturer. Right, not everyone is going to be the gold medal.
Yeah, that's the Giulia. Next up there, what
Audi
have we got?
Q5. Now, I haven't driven this one. My initial impression is that it's going to be the opposite of the Giulia. It is going to do everything with near perfection, almost beautifully, but it's going to do it in such a sterile, neutered way that it's not going to be engaging enough. So it all depends on how the jurors are going to take it, what sort of tests they're going to put the vehicles through, or how this testing process this year has been structured in terms of what can it do. Apparently, it is very capable off-road.
Okay.
But then you need to sort of spec it with air ride suspension, and that's one of its weak points here, is the fact that as soon as you start speccing it, it's no longer a value proposition. I mean, it's a luxury midsize SUV, and
stock standard, what are you in for, about 700k there apparently?
I would have to check the pricing, but it's a price you want to have.
Yeah.
But when we're talking here, you're going to add 20 to 25% of price
yeah.
on it just in extras, if not more, you know, depending on how carried away you get. And that sometimes no longer makes it a value proposition, because as soon as you take those away, you realize it's the extras that are making this car good.
Yeah.
It's what you're paying on top of the purchase price.
I mean, I love Audi, but I remember in the early days, they used to produce cars with all the bells and whistles. Mm. You didn't have to pay any... you didn't have to spec it with any extras. It doesn't happen today anymore with most cars. Most cars, you don't get all the bells and whistles.
What do you think the strategy behind that is, though? Why can't we just walk in and get a car that's got everything?
Because it becomes too expensive. And, you know, people complain about the prices of cars, but these things are damn expensive to make.
Yeah.
It's not cheap to make them.
No.
And that's why the manufacturers have to do something in order to make the price more attractive. Mm. So they're doing the right thing.
For sure.
I'm not saying it's the wrong thing, but you know, there was the day where Audi came with all the bells and whistles.
It was of the vehicles that you would purchase like that, and it's the three big German players that are very guilty of that in terms of BMW, Mercedes, and Audi that do that. And I can understand why they do it. Why do you don't need a vehicle? You're a single person, let's say.
Yeah.
Why do you need memory adjustments on your seat? Mm. You don't change. You actually don't even need electric seats. So why are they making you pay for it?
Yeah. So no, I mean, valid point there.
Spec it according to why. You don't want a car with a sunroof. You don't have enough hair to have a car
exactly.
with a sunroof. You know. Yeah. So why must you pay for it?
In this case,
take it away.
It's a windroof.
Give it a base price, and you can rather spec it with infotainment. You know, park distance control, or whatever it is. You know, something that better suits you. So I can understand that.
Yeah.
And thanks, Henry Ford. I mean, you did that with the Mustang. All of a sudden, we could start speccing a car and tailoring it, and it feels individual. But I feel they've just Ontijdgerak is the Afrikaans saying. You know, they've just gotten carried away with it a little bit.
I see it was also voted the most aspirational by German students, the Q5.
By German students, yes.
Well, are German students...
They don't tell jokes, and you know...
Yeah, so they're okay, aspiring to drive it. That's
I don't
fine,
know, but
right.
I see this car being used by a lot of hotels for... for chauffeurs and shuttles and stuff. Yeah. So I think it's a very luxurious car.
No, I mean they are great cars. I mean, look, I had not the opportunity, but I owned an Audi once, and it was absolutely fantastic. Absolutely loved the car. Really, really nice.
No, I take nothing away from it. And like I say, it does generally. They will do everything that they say on the tin,
sure.
and they'll do it really, really well. No, 100%. Fantastic jack of all trades.
Yep.
They're possibly even going to excel in a few, but it's not going to feel like an occasion when you climb behind the wheel.
So there's two there's two cars on this list that surprised me as being on the list, and the next one is one of them.
Disco.
The Disco.
Well, I would never have made it with me.
Yeah, I was surprised to see it on this list, given its, if it was going to be anywhere, it should have been last year, because it hasn't changed much in the last year.
No, it's received a...
It's a bit of a facelift.
Quite a serious revamp in terms of the Discovery in that, and it did launch within this period, which qualifies it for...
I suppose. It started at the end of last year, right? Yeah. Okay, that's why it kind of made it.
Yeah, so it feels like an old vehicle, but then you had the likes of the Mitsubishi Pajero, which... And that's the flip side of the coin. Mitsubishi Pajero launched two or three weeks before the announcement of the finalists, or before the decision was made, and there wasn't enough time for the people to develop an opinion on it, for it to make its way from semi-finalist through to finalist.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they took the chance. You know, they could have delayed it and pushed it out until, you know, the launch until later. But why are you going to sit there and change your whole business plan and your whole business model just so that you can get entered into a competition?
Yeah, true.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, look, I mean, we saw.
I suppose they can. Can they be in the next year though?
No, they cannot.
They can't.
So they've missed the boat.
They've missed the boat.
I saw the new Disco at Festival of Motoring when Land Rover did that whole announcement with regards to, you know, backing the box and stuff like that. And I don't know, I think it looks very soft. For me, Land Rover is a hard brand, you know.
And especially when it's a Discovery.
Yes.
You're hoping for that rugged, rough and tumble, and this is coming across as a little bit of a...
It's urban
runaround.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, but I suppose the verdict's out on it, and we'll have to see what happens. The BMW 5 Series. What can you tell me about that?
BMW 5 Series?
Yeah.
Did we skip the Volvo S90?
Yeah, we did. That's why I'm also sitting. Yeah, no, there's Volvo S90 in between that. But this is very strange because both the Volvo S90 and the BMW 5 Series are in this mid-size
same
or full
category.
Size. Okay, let's this full-size sedan. Yeah. They're actually going up against each other.
Yeah, so these guys would have a head-to-head.
These guys are going head-to-head. Now, while you're not sitting there, and you're not putting the Alfa Romeo Giulia up against the Q5. Remember that these, as was discussed last
week, they compete in their segments.
They compete in their segments, 100%. And we're looking for the one that is, or they are looking for the one that is head and shoulders exemplary, or over and above its peers. And it's not necessarily, we're not mentioning their peers here. Yeah. So, but in this case, it is.
Yes.
The S90 and the 5 Series are going head to head in that sense.
Is the S90 not more of a competitor with the 7 Series?
No, it's not.
Because
in terms,
I mean,
of it,
just
in terms of its size, drivetrain, pricing, and the likes,
it seems bulkier.
It's styled more.
Yeah.
It's styled more like the 7 Series, and that's sadly that's one of the weaker points of the BMW 5 Series, is that the styling isn't that far removed from the generation it replaces.
Yeah.
You actually need to really know the vehicles. It doesn't pop off the page.
Yeah.
But for people that are going to buy a 5 Series, that's possibly what they're looking for. They're looking for something that is a little understated, and they're looking for what is essentially the middle child.
Yeah.
And the BMW 5 Series is the middle child, slotting in between the 3 and the 7. And as such, it doesn't do anything with any sort of excellence in that sense, but it does a lot of things really well. Once again,
and
like
they're
we're
great
talking
cars,
about,
aren't they?
No, it is. It's a cracking vehicle.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for a sporty drive, you're going to be a little disappointed if you climb out of a 3 Series.
Okay.
You'll be pleasantly surprised if you climb out of a 7, but it's really, it's always the middle. But if you're looking for luxury, you're going to think it's the best thing since sliced bread if you climb out of a 3 Series. Mm. But it's not going to make the grade if you climb out of a 7. So it really is that, it's that middle road.
Yeah.
And in terms of middle road cars, when people want that all-rounder, I think it's a cracking package.
100%.
And the tech in it, that it's the tech that's going head-to-head with the Volvo.
Okay.
Because they're both, in terms of advanced driver systems, assistance systems, safety systems, they're both really, really good. That is going to be the one to watch.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep a close eye on that.
Next car... It was the second one that surprised me in this list.
Panamera.
Yeah. You know, Porsche for me is a sports car. It's not a luxury sedan.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, this Panamera is a beautiful car.
Yes.
But Porsche is a sports car.
I haven't spent enough time with the Panamera to actually weigh in with my own opinion, but based on what I've heard from many of those that have spent time with them, and including owners, surprisingly capable in both aspects.
Okay.
Doesn't necessarily have the same sort of interior space that you're going to get from one of the Cayennes or the likes, but in terms of having a vehicle that is practical enough with its four doors, still sporty enough and dynamic enough to enjoy on a spirited drive, they love the Panamera, and then they say that the ownership experience is something bar none. They say that they will buy another Porsche again
just based on the service levels
and the way that they were treated.
That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Really, good to hear.
I've heard that Porsche gives a brilliant experience, no matter which one you drive.
Right, Kia Picanto.
What about Peugeot 308?
Peugeot 3008.
I don't know, we're reading the same article. My Kia Picanto is...
Clearly you're in a different article.
I must be.
You must be.
At least we're talking about the same cars, though.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go with the Peugeot 3008.
Yeah, you can't actually say 00 because...
It's James Bond.
Yes, it is. Okay. And I think it's Universal Studios or something has a bit of a trademark on it. And there was a whole court case about it with... Peugeot, and can you believe how petty? But any case, so 3008. I've driven the 2008, and apparently the DNA carries over strongly in the 3008 in terms of a value for money proposition. Interior, very, very well trimmed. Quirky, trying to reinvent the wheel in a typical French fashion, but not as eccentric as what you'd ordinarily get from, let's say, Citroën.
Okay.
And that may count against it, but it may also count for it, because they've got a beautifully simplistic, logical layout to the interior. Touch and feel of everything is really, really good.
Yeah.
And they've got a good set of motors as well. And then they're coming in with a price that you're sitting there wondering how they're staying in business. And where value for money comes into play, I think that is possibly going to be...
One of the front runners.
It's going to do very well for them.
Okay.
In terms of how they're going to rate. I'm quite keen to get my hands on this vehicle. Lawrence has driven it. I haven't had a chance.
Okay.
And he loved it. He said it was really, really,
really
good.
Nice. Yeah. Fantastic. And it's a nice looking vehicle as well.
It's not bad. I'm not too fond of their current styling house and design.
The 008.
Yeah, the 3008.
What do you think, George?
I think it looks rugged. I think it looks
like an overgrown i3, and I don't know if that's a good thing.
I think it's I think it doesn't look soft like you said the Land Rover. It looks bulky edgy. And muscly and edgy. Yeah.
It's good. There's lines. You can see the lines.
What are they
on
doing with those headlights though?
Well, they're trying.
Do you want
different.
One headlight, quad headlights, two headlights? What are you going for there?
That's just, I don't know. I think it looks. Right. I really, really like it. I think it's a
place.
Nice
where, a place where I am liking is I'm liking where Kia's going as we move on to our Kia Picanto. I really do like what they're doing with the styling. We've got Peter Schreyer, and I believe Peter Schreyer is the one responsible for their design at the moment.
Okay,
but also XVAG group, so yeah. Audi, Volkswagen, yes. Lamborghini and the likes, and a couple of noteworthy designs there. And it's really showing he knows proportions, and the Picanto looks considerably more proportionate than what it did in the past. And I'm really, really liking that. And this one is, many are saying that this one is coming in offering great value for money, but you need to get the right spec because they're still offering a couple of entry-level specs that don't quite have the same sort of safety systems.
Yep.
And that is going to count against it. While those are the great value propositions, you do need to spend a little more just so that you're getting a better, a more well-rounded package.
I don't know. I think Kia has taken leaps and bounds with the Sportage. I mean, the previous Sportage, I didn't like at all. The current Sportage is beautiful.
Yes.
But I think this has gone a little bit backwards.
The Picanto. Compare it to the previous Picanto.
Yeah, but it's
too high.
Improvement.
Now, strangely enough, that is it's one of those things that manufacturers are noticing that drivers are looking for more and more, and especially with South Africa, where our D segment sedans are on the decline in terms of sales figures, but our SUVs and compact SUVs is the fastest growing.
Sure,
people are wanting the slightly raised driving position, the better visibility, and the like. Yeah. So the likes of the 3 Series, 4, A4, C Class, and that those are, believe it or not, those are almost in trouble.
Yeah,
they're still selling.
Yes,
but they're almost in trouble. They're not liking where they've been going in terms of the sales figures, but the compact SUVs are definitely picking up. And when you're pitching and you're trying to prompt people into your brand at an early stage, you want to give them as much of what the general trend is. So you're wanting a slightly more raised driving position, let them feel safer, let them feel more in control and the likes, what they call the command driving position. So I can understand why they're going with the slightly more upright look to the vehicles and higher cabins and the likes.
Right, what's up next year? So, well, I've got on my list the Suzuki Ignis. You Suzuki drove this Ignis. Last week, didn't you? Yeah, I saw it in the basement.
And a lovely little car for the money. It's absolutely fantastic. It's offering lovely value for money, some great safety systems when you're considering it at a price point. Quality, surprisingly good. It is a Maruti Suzuki, which means that it is Indian built.
Okay.
And I'm almost wanting to go on a limb and say it's the first Indian-built finalist that we've had in Coty. I could be wrong, but it just goes to show of how Maruti Suzuki is improving their build quality and the likes. Suzuki has always offered great value for money, nice, robust, little honest motoring.
Yes.
I think that's probably the best way of saying it, is that it's honest motoring.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to be sold on the design. It's styled after the old SC100 Suzuki WizKid.
Okay.
But it's definitely an attention grab. It stands out. You notice it. It's fresh and inventive.
The Suzuki Jimny is what put their cars on the map.
Back on the map,
You know, so wasn't the Jimny in Coty before?
I don't know that one. I don't believe it was. No.
Okay.
It may have been. And then we move on to the Toyota CHR. Lovely vehicle. Great attempt. It shows that Toyota's definitely definitely has a focus on a younger audience and a younger market.
This car is radical.
It is. In terms of its styling, I love the interior, but it is very, very clever. Sadly, it's not clever everywhere because it actually has a very small boot. Boot floor is such so high that it's difficult to load something into it because that rear hatch only sort of opens up until about almost like waist height. So it's like loading up onto a counter type thing. And then it doesn't drop down. It just sort of sits there and hovers in midair. One of the downsides, the cabin can be considered a little claustrophobic and also probably one of the easiest cars to stall when you've got it with a manual transmission. Just unfortunately, the clutch and accelerator, the lack of low down torque from the little 1.2-litre turbo motor, I think, is what made it a little bit of a doddle.
Which means you have to rev it to get it.
Yeah, you need to rev it to get it out the line, or need some sort of Fred Astaire-style fancy footwork.
Fred Astaire.
to get it off the line. Those were my criticisms, and it's been echoed in a lot of the reports as well. So considerations, but returns good fuel consumption, drives really well. It's nice and sporty. I thoroughly enjoyed my time with it. I really, really liked that. I would have spent my money on it. I think it was a respectable value for money proposition in terms of I'm prepared to pay just that little bit more for, you know, like a little less boot space and that for the enjoyment of driving it. I enjoyed driving it.
Okay, so we know, George, your money's on the Alpha.
Well, my money's on the Alpha. I'm hoping.
It's a heart decision.
It's,
yeah. And where's the head?
The head is probably, if I had to really choose a practical car to go with, I think
Q5.
I think the Q5. I think it stood the test of. Of Audi and German manufacturing, and you know, so if anything, the Q5 will come in from a capability point of view, as opposed to the Alpha, which is really just it's a beautiful car.
Just emotion.
Tell me when they do this, do they take the highest spec vehicles or do they take stock standard?
The manufacturer will present what they believe to be their
best representation.
We're not going to get. It's not going to be the Alfa Romeo QV there.
Okay,
it's going to be the super model with a few extras.
All right,
you know. So, what they deem to be the almost an average to high spec vehicle.
Okay, well, I'm going with the Peugeot. I'm going to put it out there. The 3008. I don't know. Just it looks. I mean, I haven't driven, you know, half of these, but I'm going on looks. I'm going on looks alone, head and heart.
It's a stunning, stunningly muscly car.
Once again, you know, heart's going to sit there with the Giulia. I think the Volvo S90. I can only go three if I go with my actual brain. I'm going Volvo S90, 5 Series Panamera.
Okay, all right.
That's interesting.
Okay. One of those are going to take it.
Well, hopefully between the three of us, we've chosen a winner.
Well, there was only 10, so I mean, we're not going to struggle much, are we?
Exactly. All right.
We've got it covered.
Cool. Chad, I mean, while we're on the subject of cars, we're reviewing the Honda Tucson Sport. And,
Tucson 1.6 Turbo.
You want to give us a bit of intel into this fine-looking vehicle? It is really nice-looking.
Do you like the way that it looks?
Yeah, I do.
Because that's part of it. It's a sport derivative. It is only available in South Africa as a part of Hyundai South Africa's piecing together. Comes at a 50,000 rand premium, though.
Okay.
Okay. So we're the sort of equivalent at the 1.6 turbo executive. Costs 449,900. Call it 450. This one is, call it 500,000 rand. So 50,000 rand spent on it by the manufacturer, which they're charging you. But what are you getting for it extra? They start out by put a body kit on it, so it's got a front lip, it's got some side skirts, a rear diffuser, and then it's got this quad exit tailpipe on it, so the exhaust system has been done as well, and you're getting an exhaust system. They've also fitted it with a set of wheels. I'm sorry, I'm just needing to check the size of the wheels. I'm just spaced on the size. I think they are a set of 18-inch wheels that they've fitted. I'm not getting the wheel size. 19-inch, sorry. 19-inch. So it's 2 inches up over the 17-inch wheels that you would ordinarily get. And then they've also fitted the motor. So it's been fitted with a Dastek Uni chip.
Okay.
So they've bumped the power.
Okay, so that's what that's... unpack that for a layman like me. What does that lingo mean?
Okay, a Dastek Uni chip is a control module that works in conjunction with the car's computer to improve the performance.
Okay.
Okay, and it can be tuned. It basically allows a bit of a gateway for aftermarket tuning of the vehicle, and it can be tuned for more economy or it can be tuned for more power. Generally, the manufacturers are going to hover somewhere between, you know, they're going to teeter towards the economy side of the scale. And here now, okay, you're buying the sport model. You need to acknowledge that you're going to use a little more fuel, but hey, we can give you a little more power in the process. So it is up on power and considerably. It gets 20 kilowatts more.
Okay.
20 kilowatts isn't bad. Old industry standard was you pay 1,000 rand a kilowatt. So there's 20,000 rand already.
Sure. That's really, really interesting.
20 kilowatts is what they've given it. And then the torque jumps from 265 newtons to 295.
Sure.
Okay. And it's got this lovely raspy exhaust note because of the... And I tell you what, it's... What a fun car to drive.
Is it?
It is manual gearbox, 6-speed manual. Just confirming here. Yeah, sorry, I'm just checking my numbers here on the fly.
Check all the stats.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been working with other vehicles, so I've got a whole bunch of numbers floating around here. It is a 6-speed manual, and the fuel consumption only changes marginally, going from 8.3 liters per 100 average to 8.9.
That's not too
liters
bad.
Liters per 100 average. Yeah. For the extra 20 kilowatts, and yeah, it can definitely be felt.
Okay.
You feel it. The car is punchy. And it's not so much about the numbers that it makes, it's also where it makes that power.
Yeah.
So it's making it nice and low down, and that means that the car just seems to pull off the line super strong.
Okay.
Still got the Tucson-style interior. Not much has been changed in the interior. And it's a nicely designed interior, one that's really easy to work with. The infotainment works well. Steering controls, steering-mounted controls work well. The cruise control and all those functions. Nice package. So, and for 500,000 Rand, you sit there and you're reminded of what a good vehicle it is. And this is possibly just a little aspect of that it may have been missing, was a slight little performance edge that just makes it that much more entertaining to drive.
Put an electric engine in it.
There we go. We're all for electric, yeah.
Can I hang up these headphones now? I think my time here is up.
Okay. So listen, just on that note, because we are running out of time this morning, and there is quite a nice story, and we were touching this earlier on. So yeah, Chad, thanks very much for that. Your review is up on autotrader.co.za.
Yeah, Lawrence did the video on that one, and it is up on the
news and reviews
section and our YouTube channel.
Fantastic. So if you want to check that out, go and have a squiz. YouTube or our autotrader.co.za and under our news and reviews section. Toyota and Mazda team up to make electric cars.
Bom, bom, bom.
I mean, that is a George.
Well, here's the sharing of platforms.
Which is exactly what you were saying just now.
Yeah, you know, here's some evidence of it. And you know, Mazda and Ford were together before, and now Mazda and Toyota are getting together. Yeah. I think this is going to be a thing of the future. It's definitely a thing of the future.
Yeah, so Japanese auto giant Toyota said on Thursday that it will team up with Mazda and parts maker Denso to develop electric vehicles. And the reason they're doing this, and we unpacked some of the stuff earlier, so it's joint research, sharing costs, engineers, and knowledge. It's necessary to meet increasing stringent but varying environmental standards around the world. And the three firms, they've obviously said this in a joint statement. But, I mean, for years, these guys have been competitors.
Exactly, and you know, the thing that the future of cars seems to be tending towards is cars are becoming more of an appliance.
Yes, it's like a cell phone.
It's like a cell phone,
100%,
and that's a good thing.
Yes,
where your competitive advantage is no longer the actual physical chassis and the physical build of the car and the jigs and the dies that go with it and all of the design features. It's more about the software technology and how comfortable you are inside.
So the base units might be the same, but then Toyota might spec theirs a little bit different to the way Mazda might spec theirs in terms of the tech and you know, the bells and whistles, the extras, and that's where people will still side with a brand.
And one of the reasons for this is there's no rocket science in an electric motor.
No.
It is the simplest thing on the planet. There is very little. There are very few moving parts in an electric motor. So it was developed, you know, many, many, many decades ago by Tesla.
Yes.
And not Tesla Motors, but Nikola Tesla. Yes. And so the actual mechanical parts of cars can be shared.
But you've said that as well. Tesla also, they're happy to put
they're giving their stuff away
because they obviously see the future of the motor vehicle industry, that this is where it's going.
I mean, naturally they're not giving their IP and software away, because I think that's where some of the competitive advantage lies.
Mm. Yeah. So,
we saw this with Toyota when they teamed up with Subaru with the BRZ and the 86.
Mm.
And it was. They were nearly identical, and it just came down to the manufacturers actually trimming it and finishing it off in spec levels.
But like George says as well, like, you know, when GM and all those announcements were made, people move on to a different brand. A car's a car. And I think majority becoming. Of the people in this country will start seeing it like that. I think it's only the really rich few who have got enough, you know, ammo to, you know, go and choose whatever they want.
I disagree.
A car for a car's sake.
I disagree, especially locally, but a discussion for another day.
Okay, cool. Well, listen, I mean, on that note. And then I see, is it Baidu announced a $1.5 billion fund for self-driving cars to rival Tesla. So a big Chinese firm who have... big Chinese internet giant Baidu have announced a $10 billion Apollo fund to invest in 100 autonomous driving projects in the next 3 years. So again, just, you know, more concrete evidence that this is where the motor industry is going, and it is going to change.
Well, I mean, one of the reports I read is that motor vehicle progress in the next 10 years yes. is going to it's going to compress the last 30 years yes. worth of yeah. production.
So we're going to see more coming out of the motor industry in these 10 years than mm-hmm. we've seen in the last 30.
What a time to be alive.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. So really, really exciting times. And on that bombshell, it is 10:59, and unfortunately, another Fast Hour up for us. Yeah, guys, thanks very much. It's really, really been cool. Bizana, thanks for being in studio. And yeah, we're going to play you out with a little classic.
This is CliffCentral.com.